Welcome to the Water Tower Hour. I'm your host, Tim Regan, Chief Revenue Officer at Water Tower Research. In today's episodes, we'll talk about some new research put out by Water Tower Research's Consumer Products Group, discuss the broader consumer industry, trends, and impacts on the consumer packaged goods market as well. Joining me for the discussion today is Doug Lane, the Head of Consumer Products at Water Tower Research. You can find all of our consumer products sector coverage at watertowerresearch.com by clicking on the sectors tab, scrolling down to consumer products. As always, our research content is open access and freely available to all investors. Doug, thanks for joining me again on the show.
Glad to be here, Tim.
Yeah. So Doug, I think a good place to start for us is, you know, we've just completed fourth quarter earnings cycle. How have consumer stocks been doing so far in 2024?
Yeah, Tim. Broadly speaking, just looking at some ETFs that cover the space, the XLP Consumer Staples ETF, and this is companies like Procter & Gamble and Costco and Coca-Cola, is up around 6 or 7% so far this year. The more cyclical names, using the XLY ETF, which is, you know, General Motors, Lululemon, Hilton Hotels, is up, but up only a little bit, maybe 1 to 2%. So I guess the message there is that the defensive stocks are outperforming so far this year in the consumer space, but both like the S&P 500, which is up more like 8 or 9% so far this year. So if you look at the XLP, which is really a proxy for our space, it's trading about 20 times forward earnings, and that's about a point or so below the S&P 500. I should also note that, you know, since I joined WTR last August, we have been focusing more on companies that employ a direct selling or direct to consumer business model. And for those folks, it's been real tough lately. We maintain a proprietary direct selling index, and so far that index has declined 33% in 2024, and that's on top of a 25% drop in 2023.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's kind of a speaking to the larger factors out there. You know, what do you think are the keys driving the weakness out of the gates for some of these direct sellers this year?
Yeah, it's really across the whole space. And so you're talking about a lot of macro issues, the global inflation that we've just been through, rising interest rates, the geopolitical tensions around the world, and that's, you know, impacting consumer confidence. We still have a hangover from the pandemic and the overall malaise affecting direct-to-consumer businesses as consumer mobility is normalized. So people are not buying these products and having them shipped to their house. They're out, you know, traveling or you know, entertaining and just have left the space somewhat. So they're still catching up to that. And also in China, it's been a tough year, 5 years going back to even before the pandemic due to the regulatory environment there. So that's been impacting these companies because a lot of them have a big business in China. And then lastly, currency has been a headwind. I mean, you can't manage that, but you have to deal with it because it's a source of cash and you have to pay your bills. The good news is that each of these pressure points does appear to be abating, while still headwinds, not as much as they were previously. Now, if you look at the company level, what's driving the drop in the index? Company like Herbalife, which is a bellwether in our space, is down 40 to 45% so far this year. They missed the fourth quarter. The outlook was tepid. If you look at forward earnings for Herbalife, they're 25 to 30% lower than before they reported. And the multiple remains at historically low levels. They have a lot of debt they need to refinance over the next year. Nu Skin's also down 30 to 35%. The forward earnings coming out of the reporting cycle are about half what they were going into the reporting cycle. And the company sharply cut its dividend, which I think it wasn't completely surprising, but maybe it's surprising how much they cut it. The company's undertaking a huge transformation in its business as it adopts an influencer/affiliate model for its direct selling business. And it's also expanding and investing heavily outside of its direct selling channels. So I think if there's a good news for Nu Skin is that the multiple has improved. So maybe the market is giving them some credence to their new outlook and maybe a bottom is being put in here and they can start to rebuild credibility after a tough couple of years there. Medifast is down a little bit more than the group, down 45 to 50%. Forward earnings are more than 60% lower than they were at the beginning of the year. Medifast is mostly domestic, so a lot of the geopolitical and global tensions that we've been talking about in the space aren't impacting them. But They are probably most impacted by the proliferation of the GLP-1 weight loss drugs. Medifast also cut its dividend at the end of last year and is also dramatically transforming its business to include the GLP-1 as part of its weight loss offering. And also with Medifast, you have to step back a little and realize that since they rebranded OPTAVIA in 2017, that business is basically quintupled. So, in our experience, direct selling companies experiencing that kind of hypergrowth tend to, outgrow their infrastructure and eventually experience a period of consolidation. So I think that's also what's happening here, as well as the competitive issues with GLP-1. And finally, in the index, USANA has performed relatively well. Forward earnings are down, but only mid-single digits from where they were going into the reporting cycle. I never would have thought this 5 years ago, but USANA, from a market cap standpoint, is now the largest one in the space, at least as far as U.S.-based companies are concerned. So they've actually weathered the storm a little bit better than most of the group. So as I mentioned, our direct selling index is down 33% so far this year. Forward earnings are down 34%, and the multiple's gone up a little bit to offset that, of a 25% decline in 2023. As a byproduct of this, we've also seen a change in the financial profile of these companies. They used to do a, they paid the dividends. Nu Skin and Medifast had a healthy dividend that they would use to return to shareholders, and they all bought back stock, and sometimes fairly aggressively. Well, that's changed. The dividends have been all but eliminated, except for a nominal one still at Nu Skin, and stock buybacks have virtually come to a halt in the last several quarters. So typically, these companies, these models are cash machines, and so it's unusual to see them under this kind of financial duress. One company we follow here at WTR that's not part of the index, it's a smaller direct seller, is LifeVantage. And LifeVantage is doing better than each of the companies in the index. The stock, in fact, is up 16% so far this year, and forward earnings have improved as well, and the multiples improved. So it's also mostly domestic, so they don't have huge exposure to all those macro headwinds. But it's also undergoing company-specific changes with a new management team in place and a new strategy they unveiled about a year ago that they're continuing to execute on. So they seem to be meeting with some initial success there.
No, that's great to see too. There's some light at the end of the tunnel, even given all the macro headwinds going on in the industry.
Yeah, no question. I think it'll work itself out. It's really going to be a matter of when. And these companies have been around for a long time. They've weathered the Great Recession in 2008 and 2009. They weathered the global meltdowns of the late 1990s. So they're going through really the third rough patch in the last 30 years, and eventually they'll get through it. It's just a question of when.
Yeah. And I have to highlight it, but you mentioned GLP-1 drugs, right? Which, as you know, and most of our listeners know, taken off recently. You hear about them everywhere these days. Many direct sellers are in the nutritional supplement weight loss space. How have GLP-1 drugs affected them so far?
Well, it's impactful. It is having an impact in the whole weight loss space across the board, in my opinion. Certainly, Medifast, as I mentioned, has had to respond to it. And companies like Medifast, where the brand there is OPTAVIA, and OPTAVIA is a weight loss company. They have a coaching model to help you with your weight loss journey. And it's been very effective, and it was growing very rapidly, as I mentioned, as it rebranded in 2017 up through 2022. And then, with the proliferation of GLP-1s, they've kind of hit a consolidation phase, and it's been pretty severe. So companies that are heavily reliant on weight loss, like OPTAVIA, even like Weight Watchers, which is not really direct selling, it's more direct to consumer, but they're very well closely associated with weight loss, and they've embraced the GLP-1s as part of that weight loss journey. So OPTAVIA has partnered with a firm called LifeMD, investing $20 million, including a $10 million equity stake in the company. And a year ago, Weight Watchers bought Sequence, and they're starting to offer a GLP-1. So those companies that are heavily associated with weight loss are fully embracing it as part of that journey. On the other hand, companies like USANA, Nu Skin, that have a large nutritional supplement business, but they're not necessarily weight loss. They might have weight loss or weight management products within the portfolio, but that's not their mission. That's not their brand. They tend to stay away from GLP-1s altogether. They're not in the pharmaceutical business, and they really don't have are not paying any attention to it or doing really anything as far as adopting GLP-1s for their customers. In the middle here is Herbalife, which is started as a weight loss company. Weight loss is still half their business, a little bit more than half their business, and they are capitalizing on the GLP-1s by offering a nutritional supplement regimen that goes along with taking the drugs. So they don't want to be involved in offering the drugs or partnering with people that offer the drugs, but they do want to help you with that journey because GLP-1s have two, we're finding they have two adverse impacts when you're using them. One is when you are using them, you tend to lose lean muscle mass as well as the fat, which is not good. And then the second thing is once people go off of them, they tend to gain the weight back. So what Herbalife is doing is helping maintain the lean muscle mass while you're on the drugs, and then giving you a healthy nutritional regimen once you go off them in order to keep the weight off. And it seems to be a sound strategy as far as I'm concerned. Over the years, Herbalife has, gone beyond weight loss. They have a very large sports nutrition business. They sponsor the LA Galaxy. They sponsor many sporting events and athletic events over the years. So we think that Herbalife's approach of sort of helping with those on the GLP-1 journey, but not necessarily wanting to adopt it as part of their offerings.
Interesting. Now that makes sense because it really does put an opportunity for Herbalife to really be in the space, but not have to have direct competition with the drugs themselves. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, you need that help. It's, as I mentioned, it's why we go through all that to lose the weight and then gain it right back, and then the jury's still out on the how good or not good they are for you. So, in order Herbalife is interested in helping its customers lose weight, and to the extent that they can help them do it in a healthy way, it makes a world of sense to me.
And so just kind of pivoting back towards the macro side, after 5 years of declines in China, are there any green shoots for direct sellers that you see there?
That's a great question. China's really important, and I think people have kind of discounted it because after 5 years, it's much smaller as a part of these companies' overall businesses. And something like India now for Herbalife is much, much bigger than China, whereas China was their largest foreign market, 5 years ago. But the thing is that China's still a large market. It's a large consumer market. It's a large direct selling market. And we've gone through a rough patch over the last 5 years between the crackdown on nutritional supplements, the lockdowns with the pandemic. It's been really difficult there. I mean, for Herbalife, for instance, in 2018, before the 100-day review period by the federal authorities, China accounted for almost 20% of its variable contribution. And now last year it was 5%. So that's a big hole they have to fill. And to the extent that that market can turn around, I think it could be a contributor in the next 5 years, maybe as much as it was a detractor in the last 5 years. And in the fourth quarter, we saw a couple of good data points. If you look at Herbalife, it grew sales in China in the fourth quarter for the first time in any quarter since the last quarter of 2018. And additional, USANA had a 5% increase in active customers in China. So I have two kind of independent data points here, optimistically hoping that we're sort of finding the bottom in China, and then maybe we can get China back being the growth mode and the profit contributor that it was in the past.
Gotcha. And we're getting close to time here, but before we go, can we talk about the currency impact, right? Because this is something that we've seen a lot in the recent months, especially in the last couple of weeks. These companies get a lot of their profit and cash flow from outside the US. Are the currency headwinds you mentioned before expected to really continue through 2024?
Yeah, we do monitor currency. Again, the companies can't manage it, but they have to deal with it, and it is an important source of profits and cash flow for them to, pay their bills because they're all based in the US and they report in US dollars. So we monitor it because it's important. And it was a headwind in 2023, to be sure, but not as much as it was in 2022. And then looking at 2024, it could actually turn to being a tailwind for the first time in several years, in the second half of the year. Right now, the biggest pressure point's the Japanese yen, and the most favorable currency is the Mexican peso, which has been pretty strong for the last couple of years. But most of the other important currencies here, the won, the Chinese yuan, the Korean won, and the euro, are looking to be flat to slightly up. So, those are big direct selling markets, and that should be a positive impact on the currency outlook for these companies. I think, one thing we can say for sure is that the volatility that we've seen over the past several years seems to have diminished. I mean, I'm talking, if currencies stay where they are today, either way, it'll be a low single digit impact, we guess, positive or negative, by the time we come out of 2024.
Got it. And thank you, Doug. That's great. That's a really helpful update on the consumer products industry, what's going on globally as well as, in the US. So thanks again for joining today.
Yeah, happy to. Thanks. Thanks, Tim.
So a special thanks to the producers of the podcast, Nick Ford, Mohammed Dabdoud, and thanks to Mohammed for editing as well. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
The views expressed in this podcast may not necessarily reflect the views of Water Tower Research, LLC, aka WTR, and are provided for informational purposes only. The Water Tower Hour may not be distributed or reproduced without written consent of Water Tower Research and should not be considered research nor recommendation. WTR is an investor relations firm, not a licensed broker, broker-dealer, market maker, investment bank, underwriter, or investment advisor. Additional disclaimers can be found at watertowerresearch.com.